I thought Slough House was like prison. You're not supposed to ask what you're in for.
Yes, that's strange, strange game. Strange, strange game.
Something finally happening here.
What's it got to do with you? Whatever's going on, it'd be a job for the real agents.
Right, so what do we do then?
What we always do here. Absolutely nothing. Come on, back to your desks. Come on, all of you, out.
Just leave him.
You pile up the corpses, exhausted your sources, living right under a cloud. The odds are against you, the gods have blessed you. You better get back on the rails. Drill down on the data, keep pushing the paper. The depths dripping down on the walls. It's a million to one, there's a place in the sun to dance with the big boys again.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Finance Committee meets on the third Thursday of the month at 5:30 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found at our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Election season is here, and at KBOO, we want Portlanders to be prepared to face their ballots with confidence. We've got a brand new limited series coming to our airwaves and your favorite podcast platform. It's called Running on Air, a daily radio roundtable conversation with the people running to represent Portland. Every weekday, your favorite KBOO host will be facilitating a deeper conversation with these candidates, so tune in. Find the full schedule on our website, kboo.fm/runningonair. Listen to any episodes of Running on Air that you miss on the KBOO website or wherever you get your podcasts. That's kboo.fm/runningonair.
This program, Out of the Streets of Portland, is hosted at KBOO Community Radio. KBOO is in the midst of its fall membership drive, trying to raise $30,000 by September 21st. We're asking you to take a moment right now out of your day. Go to kboo.fm on your mobile device, on your computer. Donate there any amount that works for you and support your community radio station. This is a station made up of your friends, your neighbors, your community members. And we ask you to support just by a one-time or a monthly contribution. Support this program and all of the many programs that you hear on KBOO by going to kboo.fm to donate today. Thank you.
Welcome to Out of the Streets of Portland, a podcast focused on sharing the stories of people who are currently or formerly homeless in our community and helping to navigate the systems and services that the Joint Office of Homeless Services and its partners either have in place or are developing to help people move out of homelessness and back into stable, supportive housing.
On this episode, we'll speak with Eric, who along with his dog Misty, recently moved into an apartment after 20 years of homelessness and unstable housing, thanks to East County Housing and the Fuse program. Fuse, which stands for Frequent User System Engagement, uses data and intensive case management to help people experiencing chronic homelessness. It has a specific focus on those people who are the most frequently engaged in the homeless services, criminal justice, and healthcare systems. The program involves collaboration between the Health Department, the Department of Community Justice, HealthShare of Oregon, and the Joint Office of Homeless Services. 2024 is the pilot phase of the FUSE program with the goal of housing 40 people by the end of the year and then sharing the findings to potentially expand the program to serve more people. Erica Dorsey is a program manager of the FUSE program.
Even though our name is Frequent User System Engagement, where it puts the onus on the person, it's really the systems that have failed them. So we kind of see them as the most in need of supportive housing. And so we offer supportive housing for as long as they are stably housed. So that could be for years, hopefully, is the goal. And one of the really good things about our program is that we offer long-term rent assistance vouchers. So that's through Home Forward. It provides subsidized rent for as long as they qualify. So if they are income eligible, if they are considered population A, they can retain that voucher for as long as they're eligible, and they can take it with them throughout the entire county. And so that really is helpful in giving people the opportunity to have stable housing long term. So that's what's really great about our program.
Yeah, that's amazing. And for maybe listeners that don't know, could you explain who is Population A?
So Population A is a criteria that the Joint Office uses, and that means that the head of household has a disabling condition, they make 0 to 30% AMI, they have been chronically houseless for a certain period of time, or they are at risk of being houseless.
That was Erica Dorsey with the FUSE program. One of the program's case managers, Derek, explains how the FUSE program works to move people from chronic homelessness into stable, supportive housing.
One of the things that I do is, besides very obvious for the title, helping people navigate the system to find housing with their housing voucher that is from Home Forward, I also help kind of get people connected with resources to, one, kind of like lower barriers to get into housing, and then also to just make sure they're doing okay, right? Like, because a lot of these people that are on this list have experienced homelessness for not just a short amount of time, it's been a number of years, to the point where even with the client that we'll be talking to later has been homeless since he was 18, basically, and he is in his early 60s now. So it is a long going problem for them, and like most of the time, like, they're not really heard, they're seen as a nuisance, they're seen as subhuman. And so one of the things, you know, the people, they see camps on the street, they get some questionable individuals will get annoyed that they have to look at them, right? So one of the things that I do beyond just offering housing navigation and trying to get them in stable housing and connected with resources and trying to help them get their kind of life as like a fresh start is to treat them like human beings, and which they are not used to, unfortunately. It involves like really looking around at different property management companies, their websites, seeing what's available, getting a list. Really, the most important thing is one of the first things that we do, or that I do after their intake, is I will meet with them one-on-one. And it's like, okay, we're going to do a housing preference worksheet. And we go down everything that they like. In an ideal situation, this is what you would like, right? This, what amenities do you want? Do you want a pool there? Do you want a dog park? Like, do you like, you know, washer and dryer, like in unit? Like, is it okay to do if it's on site? And it's just like, we can be as greedy as we want, right? And then we try to take that worksheet and then filter it in to present options. And then when we get those options, we have them look at like a virtual tour or like just pictures and see what they're interested in. And then we go through that list of, like, I usually do like 10 places at first for the next week after that housing preference worksheet. And I'll go down that list and see, like, okay, Anna, let's rank these. Like, what are you most interested in? What are you not? You know, like, it's like, oh, this will be fine, but I'd prefer these other places, right? So I will then call them, all of these apartment complexes, in order of interest, and see if they're, one, willing to work with housing vouchers. I have yet to run into a place that will not work with housing vouchers. But that doesn't mean they don't exist, right? Then I will kind of talk about rental criteria and see if we maybe can fall under that. There's a lot of, like, places that are worried about income. So, you know, certain places will require 2, 2.5, 3 times income requirement. But that's outside of our specific situation, because with our housing voucher, they essentially do a legally binding contract that they will pay this amount every month, right? So we kind of get over the income limits on that. But the biggest thing would be, like, what is their stance on felonies, and what are the stance like on collections, stuff like that. I just talk with them, work with the leasing manager, and we try to work something through. As long as we can get that, we'll set up a tour. I'll go with them on a tour and see if that's something that they like, how, like, excited are they about it, and all those things. And then we'll put in an application. And putting in that application, we will send another letter saying, like, hey, I know this person, when they do their application, they're going to be flagged for a lot of different things, like no income, no employment, stuff like that. And I want to reassure you about how we're solving for these barriers and, like, giving them peace of mind, right? And it's really just being in a lot of communication with those leasing managers, or just people handling setting up new people, like, moving in, has really helped out quite a bit. And getting that rapport going. Essentially the process for us is that we have our outreach coordinator find the individuals. Because of how the FUSE program works, the people with the housing vouchers are very limited on who we can help, because they have been identified by the county as the frequent users of systems, basically. And so I don't know if the FUSE program specifically has been explained, but basically they are doing a pilot program to be like, it is cheaper to give people housing than have people use systems like shelters, emergency rooms, carceral systems. It'll be cheaper just to house them, give them a more stable housing environment, and have them, like, because a stable housing environment is the most important thing to having a healthy lifestyle. That can just be such a dramatic improvement. And so that list is gone over by our housing or our outreach coordinator after they do an intake. They're handed to me their file, and then we set up a meeting and go from there. And then I meet with them, introduce myself, be very truthful and honest, just be very straightforward, plain language, not trying to overwhelm them, being really, like, courteous, because you have people that come in that are wary of systems because they have been had some sort of interaction that may have caused some sort of distrust. And we really want to build that trust and build that rapport. And, like, even as an example, I had a client who was having difficulties with the current shelter. He was at his temporary shelter for that you can stay at when you have a housing voucher until you find a place, and was having a really hard time there. And I talked to him and was like, listen, like, just keep your head down. We just need to do this. Like, we're this close to getting housed. Like, I know it's difficult there, but I swear I have your best interest in mind. Like, it's going to be hot out, you know, trying to communicate with them is like, honestly, like, hey, like, what do you want to do? Do you want to find another shelter? That's going to take time. That's fine. We can do that. But like, so presenting options in a way that's just not like, no, this is how it is. Giving them options and letting them know how it's going to play out and realistic. And really just making sure that they are heard. And that client specifically was like, trust me when I say this, I have your best interests in mind. You like whatever decision you want to do, like we can do it. I just want you to understand that, like, I'm here for you and I hope that you trust that that is the case. And the client was like, yeah, no, I do trust you. So that's just an example of like some of the rapport that we have built. So it's just a matter of building that rapport and getting that kind of relationship and knowing that the sincerity and just being genuine goes a really long way. And this kind of work can be very difficult, and but you do it because you want to help.
That was Derek with the FUSE program. Supportive housing is an evidence-based solution that leads to improved health and other beneficial outcomes for people with complex needs who have experienced long-term homelessness and have one or more disabilities. Deeply affordable housing with wraparound support services stabilizes lives and significantly reduces returns to jail and homelessness, reliance on emergency health services, and improves overall quality of life. Eric is a participant in the FUSE program who was housed in 2024. Warning to listeners, Eric does make a mention in his story of a murder that he witnessed as a youth.
I think it's a great program, and I'm just very excited about trying to tell somebody else about it, because it really is, you know, everybody wants to be on the street. I've been on the street. I lived on a motorcycle for 2 years before I had the dog, riding around park to park. CDC. You know, 57 years old, that's no way to live. I've had open heart surgery, struggled with health problems, and which health problems create living problems. And this past year, little year plus, I've been living in a garage, which is not a living space. I mean, legally even, it's just not a living space. But the parent being, you know, no roof. So this program came along, and I didn't even know about this program. I've been dealing with mental health crisis for, I don't know, 10 years since my heart surgery. And it's just, I've had calls and calls, and I've gone to interviews, and when I got a call from this organization, it seemed very more positive. And it really, coming in here has changed my life, you know, 1,000%. I can't even put a number on it. It's so large. It's take me back to when I was like 32. You know, I had a good job. I was making the income, I could live and support myself, and I never thought I'd be, you know, 60 and on disability. And how hard it has made life. And I mean, I don't know what else to say. It's just been such a an uplifting experience. I got into you know, drinking a lot because I was depressed. I've been through a lot of alcohol classes and stuff like that, and I beat that end of the deal. I think back to the 80s when I was a much younger man, and I guess I was probably depressed because I got into cocaine with my brother, and that was a whole nother, you know, kind of issue, but we survived that when we got onto this. And this has really been the best program. I just am just, my neighbors love me. I love my neighbors. They've got great suggestions. Just, it's like life is brand new. I just don't know. I was so overwhelmed, to be quite honest. It's just, I can't believe it. Sometimes I wake up going, it's just going to blow up, and I know it's going to go away. And I just figured I'd be back on the street, living the street. I'm living this garage forever until, you know, I could find something better. And then I don't know how I was called. I have no clue. I got the best call one day in my life, and it's just changed me forever. And it's been, like I said, it's been the best. I don't even know how to explain it. It's just, it's so overwhelming to me. I've tried so hard to do it on my own, and being on disability is so difficult that, yeah, I ended up living in a garage and paying half my rent to a garage that I didn't even see light out of. I sleep till 11, 12 o'clock, and now it's, now I got lights. I get up at 6 o'clock in the morning. We're walking, we're doing things, we're back to productive life. And that's, to me, it says a lot. My oldest brother, who I found stabbed to death when I was 17, murdered by his wife by a hired killer, it was a terrible way to start life. And I found my brother stabbed to death, my next older brother, we're all 2 years apart, and he ended up committing suicide, you know, 30 years ago. And it just, it's really hard when you go through something so dramatic at a young age, how it can take so much out of a person and put them in such a place that you never think you'd be. So, moving forward, gone through a lot, good and bad. Always, mostly always worked. Been a house painter, car mechanic. But after the heart surgery at 50, I was unable to work because of my seizures. And I have extreme vertigo. And so nobody wants to hire you because you're an insurance risk. I mean, you get up in this category and nobody wants to hire you. No matter how great you are, whatever you do. So I've dealt with that for a very long time, and I miss working. I mean, I think working is a, it's like I tell people who have kids, you know, dogs are good for kids because it teaches them values, the reasons why your parents say don't do this or don't do that. I think it gives them a curriculum almost. I never expected to get this far, to be honest with you. I really, really did. And there were so many times I thought about suicide, how I would do it. And, you know, my poor mom, I couldn't do it because of my mom. She's already lost two kids. How can you do that to a woman? I worked my entire life. There were some great times and I had a bank account. And there's a lot of bad times where the bank account went away. And took a lot of years to get to where I'm at now and be surviving. And again, if it wasn't for myself personally, if it wasn't for my brothers being deceased, I cannot do that to my mom. She's got enough of her own problems. She's going through a stroke again. And, you know, she's 80, 85. How can you break somebody's heart? I mean, you just... The heart can be like broken so many times. I just want everybody to get off the street and get a grip on their own life and understand that there is somebody, and there is somebody worth giving a crap about. You know, they're not... Maybe they're doing drugs, I don't know. But they're still a person. And we all deserve some sort of humanization. It is. It's very degrading. And I can't even imagine some of these people on the street with the worst problems that I had. Mine was drinking. And never, you know, after the AVA, I was doing cocaine in the 80s, but after that, yeah, I never... I can't even imagine what these younger kids are going through on the street. Get to a Queen of Sober program. Because your life is well worth more than being in a tent on the street and being kicked out by a rapid response and moving on and doing all these things they do, stealing your food and your... It's just... That's so defeating to a human purpose. You know, we're not animals. But somehow, and I understand, you know, there's a lot of drug addiction. I just had a girl the other week that walking by my place, griping about, can't charge my phone. I'd be glad to help somebody out. I got a phone plug in outside my house. Extension cord, I said, plug it in here. Come get it when you need it. I don't care. That's not that big of a deal. I'll pay the electricity. Haven't seen her since. And that's been 2 weeks. Called her mom because her mom's on the phone. No idea where she's at. That's really scary. And where's she at? No idea. And it makes me want to cry. It's sad. I'm 61 and to see people who are a third my age struggling to just survive is, I can't even imagine. I just can't even put my brain through it. That's, I'm glad I'm not that number. And there's a lot of those numbers out there. So what would I say? Seek help. Go and get into a house. Go to any organization that's willing to put you up and feed you. Because that's just a step in the right direction.
That was Eric, who recently moved into housing after more than 20 years of homelessness and unstable housing. You can find out more about the FUSE program pilot on the Joint Office of Homeless Services website, johs.us, on the current initiatives page. Thank you for joining us for this episode of Out of the Streets of Portland, a podcast produced by the Joint Office of Homeless Services, a Multnomah County department with funding from the county, the City of Portland, Metro, and state and federal governments to house, shelter, and provide street outreach, navigation, employment assistance, assistance obtaining Social Security income, and case management to people experiencing homelessness in our community. Please subscribe to our podcast to get notified every time a new episode is posted. And again, you can find this podcast, along with a ton of information, data, and reports, at our website, johs.us. Thanks again for listening to Out of the Streets of Portland.
You are tuned to KBOO Portland. welcome to the show. We have on this awesome show, Tina Josh is here to share her story, her life here at KBOO Radio, KBOO Radio. In this awesome studio, she's here to share her story, her life. Tina, how's it going?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm doing awesome. When was the last time you saw each other?
I think we met in my restaurant, Desi Bites.
Okay, great. Yeah, that's right. We were at Desi
Bites. That was a very pleasant meeting.
I know. Some good
lunch,
food.
I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. Some tasty food. They have an Indian restaurant, her and her husband.
Thank you.
We had a great time talking about business and their story in their life. And now you get to hear their story in their life here on the radio, KBOO or KBOO Radio. So excited to have you here.
Yeah,
so
I'm very excited too.
Yeah, you're here not to talk about business. Desi Bites. You're here to talk about your business, Mother's Pride, your other business, Mother's Pride.
Mother's Pride.
Which
yes.
is your daycare, right?
Yes, correct. It's my home daycare.
Okay, good. Yeah. Before we talk about that, we want to know more about you, so your story, your life. So let's hear more about your story, where you're from, and all that good stuff, and how you came to be here.
Okay. So I am from Bihar state, because I will say first my state, because I'm very proud of my state, and Bihar is one of the biggest states in India.
Okay.
Yeah. So I am from there, and I moved to USA from India 2010. Mm-hmm. So you can count it. So how many years I'm here. So I did a lot of business, mm-hmm. but now I am in educational business. To make kids' future.
Very good. Yeah, because you're multi-talented. You can sing, you can dance, you have businesses.
Yeah.
But you also have a talent with kids, and that's what they want to hear about. Your talent with children, your skill set with kids, and that's with Mother's Pride. So it seems like, I think you had told me you've been doing this for over a decade, isn't that right?
Yes. Okay. So I have experience for